The Green Bay Packers try to move on from their loss in Buffalo and shift their attention to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Before we move on, we'll take one last look at that game against the Bills with Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Stone, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. We're getting ready for a game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers upcoming this weekend. Before we do that, we bring in our guest today.
Expert interview.
Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing today?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Nathan, let's break down this loss to the Buffalo Bills 21-13 this past Sunday. It was Aaron Rodgers' lowest grade from Pro Football Focus since 2008. Could you sum up his day?
It was a bizarre day by Rodgers since no one could really catch his passes. His two best throws of the game were drop passes by his receivers. So that's something that actually helped his grade from being lower than it was. But then also his two worst throws of the game were passes that were in the hands of Bills defenders, and they dropped the passes. So it seemed like no one was able to catch Rodgers' balls, whether it was the offense or the defense. His raw numbers would have looked a little better had there not been so many drops, but he was still really inaccurate on the day. He had 15 attempts with the ball in the air for 10 yards or more, and he was only able to complete two of those passes. And usually that's where an area where he is more accurate than most quarterbacks on some of the deeper throws, which is where he stands out. So one of the scary things is he was inaccurate without any pressure by the defense. He was only had a completion percentage of 44% on passes where there was no pressure. So, however, to keep it in perspective, there were still plenty of quarterbacks this past week who had a lower grade than Rodgers. So even though it was his worst game in many years, there are still quarterbacks who even this past week had worse games than Rodgers.
The Packers should consider themselves lucky, no doubt about it. You mentioned the drop footballs. Who is to blame for the drop passes?
It's hard to really put the blame on anyone in particular. I know we might have a different drop number than other sites out there, but we had the Packers at 6 drop passes. And they were dropped by 6 different receivers. So there was really no one who in particular stood out. It was just multiple players who had the one bad play. So I could try to come up with some reason for that, whether it would be the weather or something about the mentality or just simple bad luck. But really my guess would be as good as anyone else's to why there were so many drops by so many different players.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, no one player dropped like 3 balls or something like that. It's just, you know, with 6 players drop a ball, it adds up. And that's why the Packers struggled. Eddie Lacy, though, had another effective outing. Do you think the Packers got away from running the football in the Bills game and why?
First off, I agree. He had a great outing. The offensive line really helped him with that as well. I started looking at the second half play-by-play of seeing how much they were running, and they were doing a good job of running to start each of their drives in the second half. First drive, they ran 2 out of 3, the first 3 plays. Then it was 2nd and 3rd and long. Next play, they ran and then threw an interception the following play. A drive after that, ran 4 out of the first 8 plays. Next drive, 3 of the first 4. So if they got away from running the ball, it would have been those 2 really long drives the Packers had in the second half, later on in the drive, which Aaron Rodgers very well could have been trying to get into rhythm, which both drives, he did have a couple of nice throws on those drives before one ended in an interception, the other ended in a field goal. So There could have been potentially two or three more plays later on in those drives that the Packers could have ran rather than passed the ball. But that's just a couple plays and not a huge difference. I don't think they should have ran the ball a lot more than they did.
By and large, the Packers' offensive line had an effective day, both pass blocking and run blocking, led by center Corey Linsley. Now, just a week away from the Pro Bowl teams being announced, is Corey Linsley, a rookie in the NFL, really deserving of this honor?
Yeah, the top four centers in the league are deserving of the Pro Bowl, and right now Corey Linsley is playing like one of the top four centers in the league. This year's centers have been relatively bad in pass protection compared to previous years. So we have him at a plus 2.3 pass block rating, but that's still best for the third best center in the league in terms of pass protection. So he's doing a really good job of keeping defenders away from Rodgers. And then in terms of run blocking, we have him at a plus 11.2 in the league, which is sixth best. So there are a couple of centers who are better at him at run blocking, but a lot of those centers are also not nearly as good as pass protection. So, put his game together, and he's one of the better centers, including screen blocking, which he's been good at. He's only been penalized twice, which is also important, and that's below average for a starting center. So, unfortunately, offensive line, more than most positions, is just a popularity contest. So I wouldn't be all that surprised if he doesn't make it, but I do believe that he is deserving.
It's amazing what he's done as a rookie. You got to think he's only going to get better in future seasons, particularly if he continues to work with Aaron Rodgers. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, the other side of the football, kind of interesting that A.J. Hawk had a pretty good game while Sam Barrington had a poor game, seeing as they've kind of been flip-flopped in the starting lineup. Could you compare and contrast their performances?
Sure. There were two things that really stood out with those two players. First off, Hawk had a great game playing run defense. He had a forced fumble and four stops. And usually he's one of the worst inside or middle linebackers in the league in terms of their run stop percentage. I think he's second worst in the league right now at that. So having so many stops was particularly unusual and a good thing for him. So it basically looked like he's a player playing with his career on the line. So really good to see out of Hawk. As for Barrington, he had one stop, a few negative plays in the run game. Really, a lot of his game is similar to what it has been these past couple games, with the big difference being he was penalized three games, and those three penalties really hurt his grade. So neither Hawk nor Barrington had been penalized all year prior to this game. So seeing Barrington all of a sudden have three penalties was pretty unusual out of him.
Yeah, you get smart play out of A.J. Hawk and maybe not so smart out of Sam Barrington. At least you did on Sunday, if nothing else. Nathan, I know I've had a couple people on social media tell me Julius Peppers won't be around next year after he kind of had back-to-back poor pass-rushing performances these past two games. And I know these people might be in the minority here, but let's you know, help them see the picture as a whole here and Pepper's season. Can you kind of sum it up a little bit?
Oh, sure. First off, I would agree this past week was Pepper's worst game as a Packer. The week before also wasn't great in pass rushing. But his season as a whole still has been very good with the Packers. This has been the best two-man edge rush the Packers have had since 2007, when they had Aaron Kampman and KGB rushing the passer. On the year, he had six sacks, nine hits, and 24 hurries, which are fairly good numbers. While there have been plenty of head rushers in the league that have been a little more effective than Peppers, Peppers has made his grade higher because of the number of big plays that he's had this year, which is something the Packers haven't seen opposite of Clay Matthews these past several years. Just looking at the cap numbers, I know he's going to be the third highest paid Packer next year, unless they pay someone even more than that, which he might not quite be worth that amount of money, but unless the Packers plan on cutting him and then signing not only their key free agents, but other key free agents as well. I think it makes sense to keep Peppers on the roster, even if they're just rotating him in, and he'll still get some pass rush there. And that's more than what they've seen these past few years from the position.
Yeah, agreed. I sometimes wonder if they should cut back his snaps just a little bit to keep him a little more fresh, seeing as he's 34 years old, but by and large, Julius Peppers is still effective. Packers special teams really getting a lot of attention this week. What's gone wrong this week, Nathan, and maybe the season as a whole?
Sure. I think it starts both in this game and in general with Tim Mastay's punts. They just haven't been quite as good as last year. There's been a couple of things that have gone wrong, and it's basically depended on the punt. Sometimes it's simply the length of the punt. Other times it's the hang time. Other times the direction of it. But especially in this game early on, he had some not-so-good punts. Then in general, in this game, Sean Richardson, Brad Jones had a bad play or two in special teams. Goody as well, with his blocking on the field goal that was blocked. So, in this game in particular, it was just a couple of bad plays that all added up to looking bad for the special teams. But in general, they really don't have anyone too special. I guess I should mention Crosby as well. He's been fine with his field goals this year. Yeah, he's missed a couple of longer ones, but he's made plenty as well. But he's been consistently one of the worst kickoff guys in the league. So, I'd rather have Mastay be kicking off than Crosby. But in general, there's no one too special on the special teams, including the returners. Nothing's really stood out this year. So that all adds up to a below average special teams unit.
I think Micah Hyde can be okay. He does have the one touchdown this year, but yeah, I agree that, by and large, maybe nothing great happening there. Nathan, looking ahead to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game, tell us about the Lovie Smith coached Buccaneers, former Packers nemesis from the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, it hasn't been too pretty this year for Tampa Bay. They have a couple of very good players, and then they really aren't surrounded by too much else outside of those good players. On the Tampa Bay's offense, they have Mike Evans at wide receiver, who, had it not been for Odell Beckham's great past 10 games, Mike Evans would be garnering more attention for Offensive Rookie of the Year. But he's been playing very well this year. And Vincent Jackson, who has been a star in the past, might not be having as good of a year this year, but it's still a good receiver. So, the biggest threat from the Tampa Bay offense is those two wide receivers. So, they'll want to game plan against them. In terms of the Tampa Bay defense, they typically have three-star players, but Gerald McCoy, who's an all-pro defensive tackle, he's now out for the year. So, that's one less thing for the Packers to worry about. Lavonte David is still among the better linebackers in the league. And then Danny Lansana has stood out as well. But both of them are more good against the run, so if the Packers more stick with passing the ball, they shouldn't have to worry about those two players as much. And then in the secondary, they got Altron Werner this past free agency. He has played pretty well, although maybe not Darrelle Revis good. But I could see the Packers basically just avoiding him, passing the ball around to the other targets, and having a fine day there. So a few players to game plan around, but I don't think anything the Packers should be too worried about.
I hope so. Hope we're talking about a win next week at this time. Well, you know what, Nathan? In fact, I didn't tell you ahead of time. I guess we'll give you Christmas Eve off for Railbird Central, and I guess we'll be talking perhaps
All right.
about the playoffs by the time we talk next. But have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you, and I'll be talking to you again in 2 weeks.
All right, sounds good. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well. And now it's time for
Packers News of the Day.
Yesterday, the NFL released the playoff scenarios, not just for the Packers, but for all NFL teams, and we learned that the Packers can only clinch a spot in the playoffs this week, but they do need help as far as winning the division, getting a bye in the playoffs, clinching home field advantage. These things are not capable of happening this week, still capable of happening. Just not going to happen until week 17 at the earliest. The one thing the Packers can do is just merely be one of the top six seeds. They can do that if one of several scenarios happen. Here are the five different scenarios that have to happen. One of them, only one of these five have to happen for the Packers to get in to the NFC side of the bracket. Here they are. Number one, the Packers win and the Eagles lose. So there's one. Number two, the Packers win and the Cowboys win or tie. Number three, the Packers ties and the Eagles lose. Number four, the Packers tie, the Eagles tie, and the Cowboys win or tie. And finally, this last scenario, doesn't even matter what the Packers do. They can simply get in. If the Eagles lose and the Cowboys win or tie. So, I mean, a lot of different scenarios there, and a lot of them aren't a whole lot different than one another. But, yeah, if you're a Packers fan, you want the Eagles to lose, you want the Cowboys to win this week, and the Packers can find themselves with a spot in the playoffs. So, learned that yesterday. That was the big news of the day. Also, Aaron Rodgers nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. Has to do with community service and philanthropy. I know covering the Super Bowl, they hand this award out during the Super Bowl every year. Big time honor. It's a special recognition. Rodgers, just one of 32 nominees, though, one nominee from every NFL team. It ends up getting, you know, carved down by the time the Super Bowl comes, into which I think they have just three finalists for the award, but we'll find out more in the month of January about that. Finally, reportedly, the Packers brought in Steve Tasker's son for a workout on Tuesday. This according to multiple sources. I think the first, though, being Rob Domofsky of ESPN.com, reporting that the Packers bring in the son of perhaps the best special teams player of all time. coming a week after the Packers struggled on special teams so much against the Bills, allowing the punt return for a touchdown, allowing another blocked field goal, just one of six blocked kicks on special teams allowed by the Packers this season. Packers looking for help, perhaps. This Tasker kid played in the Canadian Football League, also as a wide receiver, also as a return specialist. They didn't sign him as of yet. I don't know how deep this interest goes. Maybe it's a case where they couldn't bring him in unless, you know, maybe that they play somebody on injured reserve or something like that down the line. But just interesting that, you know, that for all the attention on special teams this week, they bring in the son of perhaps the best special teamer of all time in the NFL. And boy, it sure was watching Steve Tasker back in the day. I remember Steve Tasker, freaking special teams player. If you go to search this on the internet, he was named like the Pro Bowl MVP one year. And I know it's just the Pro Bowl, but I can remember as a kid watching that game, and a special teams player wins the Pro Bowl MVP award. They did play harder back in the day, by the way. We're probably talking early 90s here when that happened. But, Steve Tasker, he was a heck of a player. You know, I wanted to draw everybody's attention, spend the bulk of the time here, my time, talking about one thing from the Packers here. And this goes back to Mike McCarthy's press conference here on Monday in the aftermath of the game. Here's some comments from his press conference on the Packers' play calling and the run-pass balance, and then I'll share my thoughts afterwards, but here's Mike McCarthy.
Well, I thought we had good balance running and throwing it. I thought we ran it very well. I thought the particular personnel groups that we had success in, they obviously overplayed them from that point on, and then the passing game was there. But you know, it's a game you clearly look at, and at the end of the day, you know, play calling is a little different today than it was 3 years ago. I thought the reviewing the game, there's probably one or two calls that I wish I had back. But I thought we put our guys in position to make plays, particularly against the defensive call that was called, you know, throughout the game, particularly in the personnel groups.
The thing I think here, and this is one of my favorite sayings, you can't see the forest through the trees. And I think that's Mike McCarthy's fault in this Buffalo Bills game. I fully agree. I don't expect the Packers to have a 50-50 split pass and run. I totally understand when it's late in the fourth quarter, you've probably got no choice but to pass the football, especially when they get the ball back there with, you know, less than 2 minutes remaining and no timeouts. I get it. But in a game that Aaron Rodgers was just off, more so than he's been in a long time, in a game that the Packers had several dropped passes, and in a game in which the Packers averaged 6.3 yards per rush, I just don't get why you're not doing it even just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Wait, you're averaging 6.3 yards per rush. That they were effective. And you can be effective in that in the running game. Heck, when John Kuhn was out there. By the way, John Kuhn's been playing really well, I don't know, the past month or so. I don't know if it's been like a more concerted effort to get him out on the field. I think there was so much attention early in the season on the no huddle, and seems like things have slowed down, or, you know, they're of course hesitant to change personnel when they're in the no huddle, and maybe they're just, it's a more concerted effort to get John Kuhn in there while they are and figure out ways to use him. The Packers have been playing really well, running the ball really well when John Kuhn is in the game, and perhaps they need to stick with that. But I don't get how there wasn't more running in this game. It's just a case of not seeing the forest through the trees. I totally get what Mike McCarthy's saying, that they saw things on the Buccaneers defense that should have worked. They saw matchup issues like Randall Cobb being lined up against linebackers. They had the Packers not drop so many passes. They had plays that would have worked, including a dropped pass by Jordy Nelson for what could have been a 94-yard touchdown pass. But you know what? They didn't work. They didn't. And you could see it from the get-go. It was apparent the first quarter that especially the timing back shoulder throws along the sidelines, it wasn't happening. You know, it didn't matter who it was. There was, I swear, almost a time to every receiver, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, they weren't on those. And just the timing was off. There was some miscommunication, nonverbal communication. I don't know, but it wasn't clicking. And I just think you've got to go with that run a little bit more. You've got to do a better job responding to what's happening in the game. I get it that it should have worked, but guess what? It didn't work. And that's when you have to change. And it doesn't have to be massive. Again, I mean, just let's take five more rushes and five less passes, and let's see what the outcome of the game was. My goodness, that could have been the difference in this game. You know, out of those five passes, maybe that's a few less opportunities for drops and a few more opportunities for first downs by Eddie Lacy or James Starks, for that matter. I don't get it. I just think there were opportunities there that were not taken advantage of by the Packers this past Sunday, and hopefully they bounce back because everything's still ahead of them. And you know, we talked about the playoff scenarios here, and again, I don't know if I mentioned this or not on the last episode of Railbird Central on Monday. As long as the Packers win out the last two games, they can be no less than the number two seed. And that's all the motivation you need, I think, if you're the Green Bay Packers. It's not easy to win on the road, but hey, you know what's at stake by going into Tampa Bay. I think the Packers should kill them. They should crush them, knowing what's at stake, knowing all they need is two wins and they get a number two seed, which A means a bye, which means you get that week of rest, which I really think the Packers could really, really use 2 weeks from now. You know, guys like Josh Sitton, who've been fighting through this toe thing all season long. Nick Perry, who's got this shoulder thing that's been seemingly a problem every week since the bye. I mean, these guys could use a week off. Devon House, who now has the shoulder injury, these guys could use some that time off. B, you get a game at Lambeau Field. So, I mean, no matter who you're playing, Eagles, Cowboys, Lions, Saints, whoever it ends up being, you know, that a game at Lambeau Field, I think the Packers can win that. And you know, C, you get the chance of perhaps hosting the NFC Championship game, maybe if the number one seed ends up losing, no matter if it's the Cardinals or the Seahawks or whoever there. So, you know, everything's in front of the Packers here. Win out, number two seed at worst. Remote chance for the number one seed yet, but probably out of the question after the loss to the Buffalo Bills. What we have now
The day ahead.
at 1265 Lombardi Avenue on Wednesday, the Packers take to the practice field for the first time this week. And we'll be waiting to see the status of offensive lineman Brian Bulaga, who suffered a concussion in the game against the Buccaneers. Kind of reminded me, by the way, of the block that happened to Chad Clifton, in which he got blindsided. And I realized two different injuries here. Brian Bulaga has a concussion, while Chad Clifton ends up getting, what was it, a dislocated hip at the time that really, you know, affected his career. But, you know, just a Packers tackle being blindsided and going down hard to the ground, kind of reminiscent of that. But we'll see if Bulaga is ready to come back. I know Mike McCarthy was asked about him on Monday in the aftermath of the game, but really had no update at the time. We'll find out more today when the Packers release their first injury report of the week on Wednesday. Find out if Bulaga has already passed the NFL's concussion protocol, or if he's close to passing, if maybe he'll play this weekend. We'll find out more today. We may not have the whole story yet if he ends up missing, but who knows? Perhaps if it's very mild, he could already have returned, but we'll find out more. Because without him, the Packers probably relying on J.C. Treader. He, of course, filling in for Brian Bulaga at right tackle for the remainder of the Buffalo Bills game, gives up the strip sack to Mario Williams on the last play of the game that results in a safety. I don't have a whole lot of confidence right now in J.C. Treader at tackle. I don't know. He just, that body does not seem tackle, NFL tackle material to me. I don't, he just seems to have that center body, I think, that fits there. And I just don't know if he's got it at tackle yet. And I'm willing to give him, you know, time to develop, certainly in the off season and where we go from here. But he just hasn't had time at tackle in the NFL, especially at the right side. He was a left tackle in college. I'm kind of scared if he's got to play a full game there, to tell you the truth. And maybe he proves me wrong. By all means, JC, prove me wrong. Regardless, hoping for better health for Brian Bulaga, no matter who's got to play. Just wishing the best for him. Devon House already basically been ruled out this week. They haven't made it official, but Mike McCarthy said it would be a long shot for Devon House to play this week, still leaving open the possibility that he could return for the season finale against the Detroit Lions or perhaps the playoffs. So they haven't placed Devon House on injured reserve. Doesn't appear as if they're going to. Just going to need to miss a little bit of time here before he gets healthy with that shoulder injury. Remember, suffered against the Atlanta Falcons on Monday Night Football when he got tied up there with Julio Jones in a compromising position, falling on the shoulder in the end zone. But probably not looking at Devon House this week. That's okay. Packers got away, you know, without him this past week and did a pretty good job. And hopefully Sam Shields is only going to get better coming off his own concussion and injury. Another week removed. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you to Nathan Yonke for joining us this morning. We'll see you again on Friday. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at Cheesehead TV. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, Alex Talich, and everybody here at Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Kirby. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Hard Livin' by Railroad Earth on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go.
Blind man.